Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Neil Love, medical oncologist, and welcome to Cancer Q&A, Understanding the Role and Reality of CAR, Chimeric Antigen Receptor T-Cell Therapy, for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. This is a program that's targeting patients, so welcome patients to this program. Thanks also to Cancer Care, the advocacy groups, and the blood cancer support group there, who've helped us do this program and to promote it. We have a great faculty here today, Dr. Jeremy Abramson from the Harvard Medical School and the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, and Dr. Manali Komdor from the University of Colorado Cancer Center in Aurora, Colorado. We also have several other CAR-T experts who we did a survey with that you'll see the results of. Thanks to them for their participation. So today we are going to talk about CAR-T. Here are some of the financial disclosures of the faculty that is working with us today. And also just to keep in mind that along the way we may discuss the use of agents and regimens that are not approved by the FDA. So for more specific information about what we're talking about today, check out the so-called prescribing information you see for all FDA-approved products. So this is the third time, actually, that we've done an initiative like this. What we do and what I've done over the last few weeks is have separate conversations that I recorded, Zoom conversations, with eight people who've actually gone through CAR-T therapy. And I spent about an hour with each person trying to understand what their experience was like, but also what they thought would be most interesting for us to talk about in this conference. And I really appreciate them meeting with me and being willing to help us develop this conference. You'll see them as we go through this. So here's where we're heading today. We have a number of topics related to CAR-T therapy that I hope you'll find interesting. Each one, we'll show you some video very briefly from some of the patients. But also, we did a survey of these investigators, and we're going to show you the results of that as well. I just want to show you the last program we did like this was another cancer, multiple myeloma. We did this in July. We do two conferences based on these interviews I have with the patients. In this case, it was myeloma patients. We do one program, which is what we're doing right now for patients. But we also do another program for medical oncologists, so they also get the benefit of hearing the patient perspective. And here's a way we distributed that, incidentally. This is a new product that we have, which is a card that has about 10 QR codes on it. So we're going to take the content from this meeting and distribute it in many different ways and hopefully be able, this is from the myeloma program, hopefully be able to reach a lot of people who are interested in or maybe you've had CAR-T recommended. All right, so let's jump in and really start to get into the basics of CAR-T, what people go through, what the results are, and what some of the issues are that come up. We're going to start out just a little bit of an overview in terms of what CAR-T therapy is. Here are a couple of thoughts from the patients.
I like how my doctor, he said, if you're trying to explain it to someone and they're not quite understanding it, you know, with no science background and no medical background, just say, you know, we took out your T cells, which are part of your immune system. He said, tell them we made them bionic. And I thought that's a really simplistic way to get it across. And they grew them and put them back in and it killed all the cancer cells. And voila.
When I was presented with CAR-T, I said, you know, let's try this because nothing else was working at that time. I didn't think I would have survived were it not for CAR-T. My, you know, lymphoma was growing. Once I got the CAR-T, I had no adverse reaction to the infusion itself. And you could see, boy, you know, this thing is really having a dent. The lymphoma is disappearing. And 3 months into it, it was looking like, you know, it was all clearing up. I'm, you know, so happy to be alive and recognize that, you know, life is frail. It's fleeting. These 7 years that I've had with my family, I don't know that I would have had other than for CAR-T. So, you know, I'm incredibly grateful.
So we're not trying to say everybody who gets CAR-T has the same experience and outcomes of these patients. Of course, It's not hard to understand that we might have patients sent to us who do particularly well. But hopefully the thoughts that they have are going to be relevant in general. And Jeremy, I guess these first two people actually are your patients. I don't know if you're the one who came up with the bionic idea, but I am curious. I'm always curious about how people explain to patients, particularly unusual and new therapies like CAR T. I was amazed when I saw that you had sent this patient, the man there, that he got it in 2018 and hasn't been treated since. You can see doing very, very well. How do you explain what CAR T is to patients, Jeremy?
You know, I think the key is that it's a fundamentally different treatment than they have ever received before. And patients have had chemotherapy. They've had immunotherapies in terms of monoclonal antibodies that we use. But the idea of a CAR T cell is that we just fundamentally engineer the patient's own immune system to go after their lymphoma. And we do this directly. We take out the patient's T lymphocytes, we genetically modify them to target their lymphoma, and then we grow them up in the laboratory and give them back. And now their cells are bionic. They're serial killers designed exclusively to eradicate the lymphoma cells. And they've been proven the ability to completely knock out disease, even if it's completely resistant to chemotherapy beforehand.
Manali, anything you want to add to that? You know, we're seeing more and more immune-based therapies in oncology. We have so-called checkpoint inhibitors. And as an example, we have bispecifics. And one of the things you see there is kind of different. We'll talk later on about sort of tolerability issues and complications. But it's a very different type of therapy, as Jeremy was saying, for example, compared to chemotherapy. Anything you want to say about, again, your vision and how you explain to patients the way it works?
Yeah, I think very similarly, as Jeremy just said, I typically say that, you know, usually the patient's T cells are unable to recognize lymphoma as a foreign entity, and they have really stopped killing them, which is their job. So what we typically do is take some blood out from the patient called apheresis, take them to the lab, isolate their fighter cells and make them super fighter cells. Kind of think of it as a T cell with an antenna, which can now recognize the lymphoma cell as a foreign entity. In the lab, we basically then multiply them, and that unique product, which is only the patient's own T cells that are now super fighter T cells, we put them back into the patient body, and then we basically let them do the job that they had forgotten to do. And they unleash on the tumor and they continue to expand and persist. That's basically how I typically explain the patients what CAR T cell is all about.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about it being a living therapy. You know, you get one injection of these cells, but then as you're saying, Jeremy, what do we know about how long these cells persist? And so, do they always continue to be present, or sometimes do they sort of go away?
You know, they don't stick around forever. The vast majority of people will have them out beyond 3 months, most people even at 6 months. When you get to a year, you start to see some decline. But some patients, I'd say a minority of patients, maybe 20%, maybe 30%, you'll even find them 2 years later. And some you can detect long after that. You know, there is a biology of a T cell that if the target of that T cell is still persisting, then there's still a signal for that T cell to survive and keep working. And if the target of that T cell is gone, meaning all the lymphoma has been eradicated, those T cells will fade over time because their job is done.
And again, you know, it's very unique in oncology, Manali, to give a therapy once and then no more. This man, the last patient, hadn't had any therapy in 7 years. How do you find people, kind of reacting to that new reality that they just come in for follow-up, assuming they're doing well, which a lot of these people are, not all, but a lot?
Yeah, I think our patients are getting quite savvy and insightful based on all the data that they come in with as well. But initially, there's obviously a little bit of reticence. But as they go through it, they recognize that it may be a higher undertaking up front, but it's a one-and-done program. I think that has the most allure for patients that, you know, after that 1 month commitment or maybe 2 weeks commitment, they are done, especially if they get into a complete response.
So we're getting a lot of questions in the chat room from patients. That's great. Keep them coming. A lot of these questions that they're asking are things that we're about to cover, so I'll hold off on that. Also to point out that in the slide deck, which isn't available in the chat room, we have the results of this survey of these five investigators, including our two faculty. We just took out a couple comments, but each of these docs wrote like almost a page for each one of these things. The entire survey is available again, but we won't go through all of it. I notice here Dr. Weston talks about we take the T cells and turn them into a lymphoma fighting weapons. I think everybody has that same concept. So I want to kind of get a little bit into the potential benefits of treatment. Not every single patient, as in all of oncology, benefits to the same extent. And again, just to sort of get into this, here are a couple other comments from patients.
I had a very large tumor in my thymic area that was encroaching on my heart and both of my lungs. And I noticed really that I was sick because I am an opera singer. And I couldn't sing the phrases that I was used to singing. I needed to breathe way more. Once I got going on the actual process of CAR T, it was very exciting. I felt very privileged to do such a cool treatment. I was really, really excited about what this could mean for me. The constant question that I haven't wanted to ask because it is sort of fundamentally an incontrovertible but also kind of stupid question is, am I going to be okay? Do I get to the 5-year mark? Do I get to call myself cured? What are the rates of that?
I think it's definitely much better than chemo, less, evasive in many ways, less destructive in many ways too. I thought CAR T out of everything was really the least evasive, the least painful, the least terrible. I thought it was an amazing drug, an amazing thing. Apparently you can have it again. And there are also different types of CAR T. I hadn't really heard about CAR T. I was excited to try something that would be very helpful.
So Manali, in a second, we're going to go through some of the common types of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. There are different types, different treatments, different approaches that where CAR T is integrated. But just to take a step back and kind of get into, and we know that, if someone really wants to know their prognosis, they need to talk to their doctor. So we're not, we're trying to give some general thoughts about it. Maybe that'll help people know what questions to ask doctors. We'll get into some of the specifics, but cure is an interesting word that you don't hear too often in oncology. From your point of view, are there situations where CAR T is actually curative, Manali?
Absolutely. It would be an overwhelming yes, based on all the data that we have. As the audience here very well knows, lymphomas are divided into like 85 different types. It's a very heterogeneous disease. But to keep it very simple, it's divided into aggressive lymphoma and non-aggressive lymphoma. With aggressive lymphomas like large B-cell lymphoma, you used to have one shot at a cure with frontline chemoimmunotherapy like R-CHOP, R-EPOC. And then when patients relapse, you had a chance with autotransplant, but not everybody could get there. And the relapse rates after an auto were also quite high. And I think this is where CAR T cell therapy made an unprecedented impact in third line initially, where about 40% of patients who would have otherwise succumbed to their disease could actually get a cure. Given how well they favored and the efficacy of CARs in third line, that's when there were 3 pivotal studies, of which 2 were positive. And these studies basically compared patients in second-line relapse to CAR T versus an autotransplant. And overwhelmingly, CAR T cell therapy was superior to an autotransplant. And now we have follow-up of the 2 studies. Both Dr. Abramson and I have been part of the TRANSFORM study. And we do know now there's a cure of about 50 to 55% in the second-line setting. So it's just remarkable that something like diffuse large B-cell lymphoma not just the front line, but now second line and third line, we can still keep talking about cures. With regards to non-aggressive lymphomas, we definitely hope for a cure, but the reality is that we could even provide a patient a long-term remission. That would be a good goal to meet without toxicity and maintaining their quality of life. And with that in mind, I think CAR-Ts have made a huge splash in non-aggressive lymphomas like follicular lymphoma and CLL.
And we know from other cancers, too, that you may not be able to get rid of a cancer, but if it doesn't cause any symptoms, you can treat it almost like a chronic disease, and people may live normal lifespans still with their disease and die of something else. So Jeremy, John in the chat room wants to know, can a patient receive CAR-T multiple times? And Manali referred to so-called auto transplant. And a lot of times in these specialized centers where you both work, you have people who do autologous transplant and CAR-T. It often is in the same place. But Jeremy, a very different experience, a very different strategy. So what about receiving CAR-T multiple times? And can you contrast an autologous transplant and what you need to be able to qualify for that compared to CAR-T?
Yeah, these are great questions. I will, as an aside, Neil, note, I think Research to Practice missed a real opportunity by not having that opera singer perform an aria for us during today's live webinar, since it seems
well,
like she
to,
has...
Well, you have to wait to the end. You have to wait for the end for that.
Oh, outstanding. I'm on the edge of my seat.
you know how we work.
I do. Always a teaser. The short answer is sometimes. Can you receive CAR T cells multiple times? In diffuse large B cell lymphoma, one thing that we found is that if a patient is going to relapse after a CAR T cell, it usually happens pretty early. It's uncommon to relapse 6 months or longer after a CAR T cell. But for people who do relapse, a second CAR T cell against the same target usually does not work, and we do not recommend that. There are some clinical trials that have suggested that using a different CAR T cell against a different target might actually be effective, although all of the currently FDA-approved CAR T cells in DLBCL are against the same target. So today in DLBCL, I'd say no. Interestingly, in follicular lymphoma, an indolent disease, long natural history, patients who've received a CAR T cell and had several years of remission and then relapse have actually responded again to the very same CAR T cell. And so I think about sort of these indolent lymphomas that Manali was describing and the aggressive lymphomas is a bit different. I typically don't go back to the well in diffuse large B cell lymphoma, but I would consider it in a patient with follicular lymphoma who had a nice initial remission. Your second question was about an auto transplant. This is something we've done for decades. And the idea was if a patient didn't respond to chemotherapy, we'd give them more chemotherapy and at higher doses. If a small hammer didn't work, let's use a sledgehammer. What we learned in the modern era is that that was kind of like throwing good money after bad. If a disease was chemotherapy resistant, just giving more of it was unlikely to induce a durable remission. But what it would do is cause a lot of side effects. And not surprisingly, if you give a huge amount of chemotherapy, which is what is the auto transplant, you're going to get a lot of chemotherapy side effects. And it turns out that CAR T cell therapy tends to be far easier. And that means far more patients are eligible for a CAR T cell. There's no upper age limit. Patients can have some modest impairment of organ function. Patients can be a bit frailer. These are patients who we never would have given high dose chemotherapy and autologous transplant to, but we can routinely give CAR T cell therapy to.
So I'm curious, Manali, what's the age of the oldest patient you've given CAR T therapy to?
88.
Wow. Jeremy?
92.
Wow. Okay. So I don't think you'd be doing autologous transplant with high-dose chemotherapy in an 88-year-old patient. So
exactly.
Here's another issue that comes up. And actually, in the chat room, someone from North Carolina says, is the CAR-T retrieval and administration process identical? Does making the decision about which hospital have the procedure, is that important? And Manali, that really gets into the question of which CAR-T product you receive, which here you see some of the answers about how people make a decision. Can you talk about which CAR-T products are currently available, Manali? And actually, I think tied into this question from the chat room is, it seems like the key differentiating factor is not how well it works, but more with this person's getting into the process of receiving it, how long it takes, et cetera. But what products are available right now, Manali, and how do you separate them out?
Yeah. So we have four products that are currently available. We have axi-cel, liso-cel, tisa-cel. They are all available for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma after patients have progressed after three lines of treatment. We then have axi-cel and liso-cel in the second-line diffuse large B-cell lymphoma setting. Now, moving on to follicular lymphoma, we have three products approved, axi-cel, liso-cel, and tisa-cel in the third-line setting. In CLL, we have liso-cel approved. And in mantle cell, we have liso-cel and brexa-cel approved. I typically keep it very simple. It just helps me tell my patients, you know, what they might be in for in terms of what to really look for. The way these products are designed really depends on how they expand. So there is something called a CD28 domain and something called a 4-1BB domain. A CD28 CAR-T product, when infused into the patient body, just expands very rapidly. As a result, usually these patients end up having cytokine release syndrome and potentially neurotoxicity. On the other hand, with 4-1BB products like liso-cel and tisa-cel, the expansion is very slow and it stays. As a result, the rate of CRS and ICANS is actually quite low, ICANS meaning neurotoxicity. A lot of what we do really depends on patient age, comorbidities, because I do believe the efficacy across all of these products is really the same. It also matters how long does it take to make the product. Previously, liso-cel used to go up to 32 days. Now, because of better manufacturing programs, it's now shortened to 24 days. But the fastest product that comes back to you is the CD28 axi-cel product. It comes back within 17 days. So if someone is extremely fit, able to sustain a CRS, in those situations, sometimes I do move forward with axi-cel, but majority of the times, I think I have pivoted to liso-cel because as one of my patients said, he's had a very boring experience after CAR-T cell therapy with liso-cel. He has had absolutely no symptoms. Boring is good. So as long as I can take my patients safely, usually I pivot to 4-1BB products like liso-cel. Those are usually favored.
And here you can see what Manali wrote on the survey. We didn't put all this into that little slide, but just to give you an example of how much more content there is in the chat room with the complete thing there. Jeremy, another issue, a lot of times patients will get so-called bridging therapy before CAR-T. Can you explain what bridging therapy is? And again, you can read how people think about it. You know, usually a lot of people, most investigators kind of sort of say similar things. They just say it in different ways. So, you know, hopefully, and we'll talk about, you know, some of these other things, cytokine release syndrome that Manali talked about. We'll talk about that in a second. But Jeremy, what is bridging therapy?
Yeah, so, you know, CAR-T cell therapy is unique in that it's a multi-step process. We have to collect out the cells, we send them out to be manufactured, and then we wait for them to come back. And as you heard from Manali, that can be 17 days, it could be 24 days, and if there's a hiccup in the manufacturing, sometimes it can be longer. And if we're dealing with something like diffuse large B-cell lymphoma or mantle cell lymphoma or even an aggressive follicular lymphoma, the disease might be large, it might be symptomatic, it might be growing quickly, and we don't just want to twiddle our thumbs and wait for the product. We want to do something to control the disease. And there are multiple reasons to do that. It's to improve symptoms, to be sure, but it's also because the larger the amount of disease, the higher the rates of side effects, and the lower the likelihood is of long-term benefit. Less is more when it comes to the amount of disease. So if we have a patient with a lot of disease, we want to give a bridging therapy, which means it's the bridge between when we collect the cells and when we give them back. And we cross that bridge with a hopefully effective treatment to reduce the amount of disease and have the patient go into the CAR T cell less symptomatic and with a lower amount of disease that will lead to more favorable outcome. And sometimes that's a systemic treatment. Sometimes it's radiation therapy. Sometimes it's steroids alone. And sometimes patients don't need bridging therapy because they have a very small amount of disease and they're asymptomatic, and we can just keep an eye. So this is very personalized to the patient.
So also, just to mention, I showed some slides of the program we did on myeloma, and there is the other big area. You see a lot of CAR T being used, different products, different target, but similar idea, one and done, and the same kind of complications. So we also asked in our survey for people to describe how they explain to patients sort of what the process is or multiple steps in the process. And again, Manali, this is what you actually put in there. And well, I'm not going to ask you to go through all of this, Manali, but any comments you have about how you prepare people for going through this? And also maybe just comment, too, that based on some work that you presented very recently, some of the follow-up requirements, particularly for one of the CAR T products, Liso-Cel, were brought down, so it was less demanding of the patient. Can you talk about some of the key time points that people go through and sort of how these new approaches that the FDA okayed make it a little less onerous to go through?
Absolutely. I think with regards to a patient's CAR T journey, time is key. Time is key to keep the cancer stable, to get the product back, and to be able to give the patient the efficacy that we want the patient to get. So to put it all together, the map really starts when I get that call from the patient's primary oncologist. And we will make every effort to see the patient ASAP. The ASAP part is really crucial because that's when we have to submit the approval to get a pair to approve CAR T-cell therapy. We have systems in place at academic sites like ours and Jeremy's, where we have been doing CARs for years now, where really then we have to get the patient to apheresis. Usually give and take, considering all the pair approvals, it might take 10 to 14 days. Post-apheresis is when we really think about whether or not we want to give bridging or not give bridging. If we decide to not give bridging, we want to check in on patients. We typically do that via telehealth visits every 10 days. If we choose to do bridging, then that bridging can actually be provided with the patient's primary oncologist at their local site. Subsequently, when the product is back, and majority of the times, you do get the product back on time, and that's where the actual relocation to the CAR T site occurs. Previously, it used to be 30 days. It was a mandate that was given by the FDA to ensure safety. However, there was a recent pooled effort that we presented with Liso-Cel studies. It was a comprehensive analysis. It involved around 1,500 patients who went through trial and non-trial Liso-Cel. And the gist was that majority of the cytokine release syndrome and neurotoxicity, if it occurred 97% of the times in the first 2 weeks after infusion. So we presented that data to the FDA, and FDA was very swift to move forward to reduce the monitoring requirements. So now patients actually do not have to stay at the treating facility for 30 days. They only have to stay for 2 weeks. If they do not have cytokine release or ICANS or fevers or patients are doing well, they can actually go back to their home with their primary oncology support. The other thing that also was very important that came out of that analysis was driving restrictions. Previously, patients used to, they were not able to drive for 8 weeks after CAR T-cell therapy. As you may imagine, it was quite onerous. And now the restrictions have been shortened to 2 weeks. So again, the idea is to provide more access to patients. We really don't want patients to lose their jobs and take time off of work. 2 weeks of relocation seems a lot more feasible now with Liso-Cel as compared to 4 weeks that used to be initially the case.
And actually, the opera singer received CAR T as an outpatient, which is hard to believe a few years ago that this would happen, but it can be done theoretically outpatient. So now we're just going to do three 2-minute summaries of topics that we usually spend about 2 hours on when we do a program for medical oncologists. So this is like a tasting menu here today, just to kind of give patients a brief view of this. And Basically, I wanted to kind of ask you where CAR T fits in with the three common types of non-Hodgkin lymphoma, beginning with follicular. So, Jeremy, can you kind of briefly talk about how follicular is different from some of the other lymphomas, what the strategy is, and where CAR T fits in?
Yeah, so follicular is one of the most common lymphomas in the United States. And it's an indolent disease. The goal for patients is a completely normal life expectancy. And in the modern era, it's estimated that only about 20% of patients will actually have their life shortened by follicular lymphoma. I think that's a testament to the successful therapies that we have available now. Now, we typically will initially give a type of chemotherapy and with immunotherapy in the frontline setting. Most second-line patients, if they relapse, will typically get something called lenalidomide in combination with rituximab. And then in the third-line setting is where things have really shifted. And we now have the option for third-line and later follicular lymphoma of either CAR T-cells, either liso-cel, tisa-cel, or axi-cel, or bispecific antibodies, which are also highly effective off-the-shelf antibodies that directly engage T-cells against the patient's lymphoma. The antibody treatments, the bispecific antibodies, epcoritamab, mosunetuzumab, are given for an extended period of time, between 8 and 17 cycles for mosunetuzumab, or actually until progression or intolerance for epcoritamab. Whereas the appeal of a CAR T-cell is inducing a deep remission with a single infusion of CAR T-cells. And what I would say between CAR T-cells and bispecific antibodies, both now available as third-line treatments, they're both extremely effective. I would say that the depth of remissions and the length of remissions appears longer with CAR T-cells than bispecific antibody treatments. And so it really means talking to patients about what they find most appealing, the different risks and benefits of each type of therapy, and then selecting the one that feels best for them.
So, Manali, another type of non-Hodgkin lymphoma that's pretty common is diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the more aggressive type of lymphoma. Can you talk about how these people are typically treated and where CAR T fits in?
Yep. So for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, we typically talk about CAR T-cell therapy in the second-line setting or in the third-line setting, meaning patients who have seen two prior lines of therapy, that would be third-line if they were to not respond to two prior lines, versus patients who have just seen one frontline chemoimmunotherapy and have relapsed within the first 1 year of receiving the chemoimmunotherapy program, or patients who have relapsed but are really not going to be fit to get an autotransplant beyond the one-year mark. I think these are the two settings where I would offer CAR T-cell therapy. Based on data, 40% of patients can be cured in the third-line setting, 50-55% of patients can be cured in the second-line setting. Majority of the patients, based on approvals now, really do relapse. If they relapse, they relapse in the second-line. So a lot of us are giving CAR T-cell therapy in the second-line setting. And to your question about which one do I choose, I typically favor liso-cel in the second-line setting and the third-line setting. The products seem to be all efficacious, but I typically choose it for its better toxicity profile.
And we'll get more into the types of toxicity, but the other lymphoma I wanted to bring to your attention, much less common, Jeremy, is so-called mantle cell lymphoma. Again, can you talk about how people with mantle cell are usually managed and where CAR T fits in?
Yeah, mantle cell lymphoma has really undergone rapid evolution. The vast majority of patients for quite some time have gotten chemotherapy in the frontline setting. And as we saw improved chemotherapy in the frontline setting, we also saw the availability of BTK inhibitors, which are pills that became standard of care in the second line setting. And for that reason, CAR T-cells were initially explored in the third line setting after patients have had both chemotherapy and BTK inhibitors, where we had very few effective options available. What's happened more recently is we've incorporated BTK inhibitors more in the frontline setting in combination with chemotherapy. And that means patients who are relapsing with the most modern therapy, often relapsing after both frontline chemotherapy and BTK inhibitors, in which case we're thinking about CAR T cells as a second line treatment for those patients. And CAR T cells are extraordinarily effective, with a majority of these patients going into a complete remission, and many of those remissions lasting 1 year, 2 years, or longer.
So you've already heard some reference to complications from CAR T, so-called CRS or cytokine release syndrome. Another type of sort of early complication can be so-called ICANS or neurologic toxicity. ICANS stands for immune effector cell associated neurotoxicity syndrome. I think you heard one of the first patients say that he cruised right through it, no problem, but not everybody does. So we picked out a couple people who actually had these complications, and you'll see that at this point they're very well. Most people get through this fine, but just so you get a little more of a feel for what the patient goes through if they do have these complications, here's what they have to say.
Day two, I started spiking really high fevers. And of course, I was in the hospital, so they were able to be controlled. I really only just had one bad night for a couple of hours, but I guess I was classic textbook for the neurotox, big time. I lost 3 days. I don't even remember any of it.
When did that start about?
Day four. That evening, I kind of started with the word retrieval, but I was completely aware of it. And then the next day, it was getting a little bit worse. You know, I had it in my head. I just couldn't get it out. I guess it's probably what it's like to have a stroke and be aphasic. And then eventually, it turned into just complete nonverbal. And then it's literally like I woke up from a dream. I woke up and it was completely gone. A week after the CAR T is when it all went away.
How high were your fevers?
Like 102, 103. They never went higher than 104.
And you mentioned you had hand tremors. When did that start?
That really actually started happening after the fevers. They make you write the sentence every morning. I could see my hand coordination to my eyes were a little bit off. You know, like I would try to write and the hand wouldn't move. But I like to write very neatly. And I know it was shaking. It was all over the place.
And how long did that last?
That basically lasted about a week, at the most.
So, Manali, can you give us a little more granularity of what people experience? Let's start out with cytokine release syndrome.
Yep. So I usually tell patients that, you know, when the product is infused, it kind of, you know, unleashes on the tumor and starts really killing the tumor rapidly. This war, so to speak, causes an immune storm or an inflammatory state, which in the first week can manifest as a syndrome called cytokine release syndrome. So CRS is the acronym, and it typically starts with a fever, sometimes can lead into low blood pressures and then shortness of breath. And then based on the grades, there are grades that we will grade based on the intensity of your shortness of breath, how much oxygen patients may or may not require, whether a patient needs more medication to keep the blood pressure up. All of these grades will basically assign whether or not we need to give you a medication. Usually, cytokine release syndrome is low grade. It happens in the first week. It almost feels like you may be down with the flu. So a lot of times, antibiotics may get started at the same time. Fever workups, such as blood cultures and making sure you don't have an infection, that may also be part of the program. Usually, we give anti-inflammatory agents. We start off with something called tocilizumab and steroids. These are basically anti-inflammatory agents to curb the inflammation down so that your symptoms can be mitigated and completely resolved. I will say majority of the times CRS is completely resolved within 7 days, usually within 48 hours. Sometimes we may have to repeat a dose of tocilizumab and steroids, but this is all now set into our algorithms, and these are standardized across globally. Usually, if patients have CRS in the first week, I usually tell my patients it is very likely that you will have neurotoxicity in the second week. Neurotoxicity is more of an emotional burden because we don't really know how a patient will manifest. It could be as mild as just tremulousness. It could be a little bit moderate. moderate, like slurring of speech. It could be something that will be more traumatic to the caregiver, where the caregiver walks in and the patient is not able to recognize the caregiver. We have different scores called ICE scores. Different lab coats will come into the room and assign you these questions every day. As the patient stated, you have to write a sentence and, you know, based on how your responses are, you get assigned a score. If the score is low, we usually watch. If the score starts getting lower, then we typically will start using steroids, which would be the first treatment armamentarium, which would again be the idea to curb the inflammatory storm. If sometimes steroids don't work, we may have to up the ante on anti-inflammatory agents, but usually that is not the case. Usually, like I alluded to, patients may have some neurotoxicity. It may be common in scenarios where lymphoma burden may be high. It may be common in scenarios where lymphoma is usually present in the blood. For example, CLL and mantle cell lymphoma, we see neurotoxicity in these patients. But for the majority of patients, this is completely resolved. And even if they do have it, very rarely is it so high grade that it merits an ICU admission.
And here are some samples from the survey of the investigators in terms of their experience with cytokine release, also with ICANS or neurotoxicity. Jeremy, anything you want to add to what Manali said about CRS and ICANS? And also, you know, I know one of the patients mentioned having to do handwriting, you know, they're trying to pick it up as early as possible. Sometimes it's the caregiver who sees a change that maybe is not evident to the medical team. Is it still required to have a caregiver present in the hospital when the patient gets CAR-T?
So patients require, we like patients to have a caregiver at home when after discharge or if they're treated as an outpatient. They don't have to have a caregiver with them in the hospital. That's why we're there with them with around-the-clock nursing care. But it also isn't that they need somebody in their room with them, staring at them creepily while they sleep. It really just means somebody has to be checking in on the patient. And we have treated patients who don't have a live-in caregiver by ensuring that friends and family members stop by frequently during the course of the day. So there are ways we can do this. I think the important point here is that, first of all, not everybody gets CRS or ICANS. If people do get CRS or ICANS, it's almost always low grade, not severe. And furthermore, it's almost always completely reversible. The other important point, and Manali alluded to this, is that if people develop CRS, they will often then develop ICANS after that. But if people do not have any CRS, it would be very rare to get ICANS. Typically, it's a 1-2 punch if it happens.
So we're going to go through a few other topics, maybe not quite as technical, more quality of life oriented. Here are a couple of other comments from patients in terms of finding out information and sort of their experience dealing with getting information from doctors and online, et cetera. And also the possibility of participating in clinical trials. You know, CAR-T hasn't really been out there that long. You know, it's really out, I guess, maybe 5 or 10 years. And you think back to a time when it wasn't approved and these people are in clinical trials. And in 2018, CAR-T was not available, but he was on a clinical trial and that's what happened. Here's a couple comments about that.
I'm somewhat privileged. My wife had done a great deal of research. Had I been the sole information gatherer, I probably could have done maybe 10% of it just because of my condition, but also my inability to kind of think broadly and see things broadly. I think a patient needs to have a patient advocate. They need an individual that goes to bat for them, no holds bar. And I believe that to be true, even if you have the greatest doctor in mind that's helping you, I think you need that patient advocate that's really asking those key questions that I certainly wouldn't be able to as a patient.
I'm curious if you have any questions or think you'd like to hear them discuss about clinical research in this area.
Most definitely, and here's why. It's very simple. It's four letters, H-O-P-E. I would just say that hope is information from your doctors that allows you to function while you're going through all this stress and anxiety and worrying about stuff. I literally asked my transplant doctor, I said, what do you do if this doesn't work? And he goes, well, we're not going to give up. We'll try something else. And that meant a lot to me, I can tell you right there. You got people on your team.
Jeremy, any comments or advice to patients in terms of, you know, getting information, involving their family, and also participation in clinical research? You know, there was a day not that long ago in oncology that most of the times that people would go into clinical trials, it really wasn't benefiting them, you know, it was more patients in the future. Now you see people all the time, like the first patient who goes into clinical trial, and they benefit from the clinical trial. Any thoughts, Jeremy?
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, today, you know, we enroll patients on clinical trials primarily because we think that clinical trial has a chance to help that patient. And if you look at our understanding of the biology of these diseases and development of these novel therapies, they've gotten better and better and better. And it's critical to understand that life-saving therapies like the CAR T cells we're talking about today that are fully FDA approved were always first only available on a clinical trial. That's true for the bispecific antibodies. It's true for rituximab and CHOP going farther back. And so you have access to the most cutting edge, potentially the most effective therapies first in the setting of a clinical trial. And today that means newer CAR T cells with newer technologies that are manufactured faster, that are targeting multiple proteins on the lymphoma cell at the same time, newer bispecific antibodies that may make CAR T cells obsolete someday. And so I think it's critical to seek information about available trials and to have advocates, as that patient said, who can help do research, can help reach out. Sometimes the best treatment isn't available a mile from you, but might be available 100 miles from you. And maybe it's worth making that drive and seeing what's available. Doing the research can be really important to knowing what actually your opportunities are.
And, you know, so challenging, so many stressful situations in oncology and in lymphoma to try to be able to digest all the information. Manali, anything you want to add there in terms of advice to patients in terms of getting information and also clinical research?
Yeah, please continue to have hope, because we are really advancing lymphoma outcomes as a result of clinical trials. It's very important, I think, that patients recognize that we really don't do placebo-controlled studies. It's unethical to do that in lymphoma. So a lot of times patients come with the, you know, they're worried that they might get a clinical trial where they'll get a sugar pill. We don't do those kind of studies. I think it's very important for them to recognize that we are beyond those days. Anything and everything that's come out in lymphoma that has been curative has come out of a clinical trial. With regards to clinical trials, like Dr. Abramson said, there's way more things we need to do. There are patients who may not actually respond to CAR T cell therapy. And the next gen slew of clinical trials that are currently happening are really going to target that problem, as to what happens if somebody doesn't respond to CAR T cell therapy. With that, in terms of information, there is a lot out there. I think just going on a random online search is just going to put everybody in a tizzy. Probably primary oncologist is your first stop, obviously your family. And then if you're in a community setting where maybe there is not a clinical trial, it would be immensely helpful to ask the primary oncologist to get a second opinion at an academic site. I think that would be a very good way to know what your options are. And then you still have the power to decide whether or not you want to move forward with it.
Because ultimately, the patient's really the one who's in charge to make these decisions. So a couple other issues that were brought up to me by patients that I thought would be good to bring up. One are financial considerations with CAR T, and also long-term issues. Once you get beyond the first few weeks, what types of issues come up, particularly as it relates to infection? Here are the patients.
Somebody should talk about, you know, does insurance cover it or not cover it, right? Is it, you know, Medicare cover it, not cover it? Is it covered by, you know, private insurance? What happens if, you know, you get some neurological impairment? You know, does that get covered? At my stage, there were very few centers that were doing this. I think, you know, there's more now. But particularly, you know, in rural semi-rural areas or, you know, away from a center, I have to travel. I have to come 300 miles to go to, you know, Birmingham, Alabama. And will I have a place to stay, you know, if I have to be admitted? Is this done outpatient, inpatient? How are those costs, you know, handled?
How long does it take for my body to be normal? In what ways is my body never going to be normal? What can I expect? And especially as it relates to putting me at risk for other things, and specifically infection.
So, Jeremy, any thoughts in terms of financial issues? Also, people not being able to work, and that's mentioned by a lot of the people in the survey. Even the caregivers may not be able to work. And also, how does CAR-T affect the long-term susceptibility to infection? What about using prophylactic antibiotics or vaccines?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, where these products are FDA approved, they're almost always covered by insurance, including Medicare. Now, some insurers will have certain restrictions. They'll approve one product or another product. They'll approve it at this center, but not that center. But effectively, it'll always be covered as long as it's for an FDA-approved indication. Some insurances may apply very high co-payments, however, for these therapies that could make them unaffordable for certain patients, and it's important to talk to your insurers about that. But in my experience, at least in Massachusetts, the coverage is typically excellent. Now, there can be ancillary costs. You've heard us talk about the travel and relocation. We have a lot of resources to help support that, including the companies that make the products themselves, offer travel grants for patients who have to travel, and our individual centers have social workers and resources available to make this as easy as possible and to prevent this from being cost prohibitive. Because if a CAR T cell is covered, approved, and the best thing for a patient, the last thing we want is for a hotel room cost to be a barrier. We don't let that happen. In terms of long-term safety, you know, there is a long-term deficit in the immune system that does recover gradually over time. Right after CAR T cell treatment, the immune system is really quite impaired. With time, the blood counts recover. But what we do know is patients' T cell function, their healthy T cells, as well as their antibodies that fight off infections, may be diminished for quite some time, and for some people, even for years. And so what we do is in the immediate post-CAR period, we have people on certain prophylactic antibiotics to prevent a type of pneumonia, to prevent shingles infections, for example. And we monitor antibody levels called immunoglobulins. And if patients have very low immunoglobulin levels and they develop serious or recurrent infections, then we can replace those antibodies with something called intravenous immune globulin, or IVIG. In addition to that, we think about revaccinating patients. Certainly for some of the most common infections like respiratory viral infections, influenza, RSV, COVID-19, some centers advocate revaccinating patients against all of their childhood vaccinations. I typically don't do that because this wasn't a bone marrow transplant. But for patients who've had a lot of prior therapies, I will sometimes check antibody levels to see if they've lost immunity to something like pneumonia. Or if their last pneumonia vaccine was 5 years ago, I'll give them another pneumonia vaccine. I'm typically not revaccinating patients against mumps, but I often am doing things like pneumonia and respiratory viruses. But I think it's critically important to monitor immune function over time, understanding that the deficit can really last for a long time. I monitor immune function and only stop prophylactic antibiotics when I see that patient's T-cell immunity has sufficiently recovered over time, for example. And if somebody does develop a fever, we say, no matter how long it is after a CAR T-cell treatment, let us know about it. We want to send some tests pretty quickly. We want to see if we can identify the infection and treat it before it has an opportunity to potentially becoming serious.
Manali, anything you would add there in terms of financial issues and also long-term complications or life after CAR-T?
I don't have anything more to add to what Jeremy described so well. With regards to long-term complications, I think everybody was aware of the recent black box that CAR T cell therapies can potentially cause second primary malignancies. This was a cohort of multiple hematologic malignancy patients who had gone through CAR T cell therapy after having received multiple lines of treatments. I mean, more lines of chemotherapy in the past can certainly cause DNA damage and predispose you to second primary malignancy. So yes, that risk is there, but the risk of not letting the lymphoma go into remission is quite high. So we really choose efficacy, control of lymphoma, and the small chance that this might eventually translate into a second primary malignancy may exist in heavily pretreated patients. But I have really not seen anyone in the second line setting, for example, develop a second primary neoplasm.
Yeah, I think when that first came out, people are kind of wondering where it was heading. And it looks like it's kind of, actually, you can see second cancers after chemotherapy as well. So
also,
again, very rare with chemotherapy, very rare with CAR T. So the final issue is, again, kind of getting into long-term recovery and the healing process, so to speak, after getting CAR T therapy. And also, I was curious, I was asking patients about how they deal with anxiety. Do they use any sort of, let's say, complementary strategies? And here are some of the thoughts.
I'm a meditator. I do yoga. I do Tai Chi. They were so fundamental to my ability to, A, go through the treatment, to understand what was happening to my body. So I think, very, very important, Dr. Love.
When I come up against that six-month visit to Johns Hopkins, I'll be honest, I get nervous again. I don't want to say I live waiting for the shoe to drop, but I just get nervous until there's anxiousness till I get the results.
Anything that you found over time that helps you with the nervousness?
I'm Christian, so I really have relied on my faith.
Would you like to give us a sample of your singing?
Sure.
Go for it.
Let's see.
Que fais-tu, blanche tourterelle, danseuse de vautour?
Brava.
So, Jeremy, any thoughts? You think about somebody presenting, she couldn't even sing. She was so short of breath at that time. Now she's actually back singing. Amazing story there. Any thoughts about these issues? Do you find complementary strategies like Tai Chi or meditation helpful to patients? Any other complementary strategies that you think are helpful? What do you look for in terms of trying to help people cope with the anxiety they might have?
Yeah, I think any of these strategies can be helpful. It's important to talk about the fact that there is anxiety surrounding this, and there are concerns, both short and long term, not just the disease, but the risk of late side effects that people read about and think about. And we talked a lot about hope, and it's important to maintain hope, and it's important to not live in fear because you can see all of these patients are doing so wonderfully well. And everybody has different strategies. So I say, what helps you in other settings when you're dealing with anxiety and stress? And for some people, it's yoga and meditation. And at some people, it's talking with certain friends and confidants. And at some people, it's counseling. And in some people, it's taking a hike out and getting some fresh air and clearing one's mind. And I think it's a personalized process, but we need to focus holistically on the entire patient and think about what strategies we can bring to bear other than all the medicines we can offer to help make patients' lives fruitful and wonderful throughout this entire process and beyond.
Final comment from Anali.
I think it's absolutely important to normalize these feelings. If we were to ever swap chairs, I think each one of us would go through everything that the patients talked about. And it's important to understand that this is normal. Majority of our centers have oncopsychologists who help our patients through the journey And even after they have been through CAR T cell therapy, even the ones who are completely successful and cured. And I think it's very important to have mindfulness of the fact that, you know, things are going to be okay no matter what. I think it's extremely essential to not lose hope. That's really key. And the fact that you have to trust your team who takes you through this process.
So, Manali and Jeremy, thank you so much for working with us today. Audience, thank you for attending. And I particularly want to thank the 8 patients who went through CAR T therapy for sitting down with me and sharing their experience and bringing up their questions. Be safe, stay well, and have a great night. Thanks so much, Manali. Thanks, Jeremy. Have a good one.
Thank you.